So what would you say, an x-ray, standard x-ray, a chest x-ray, labs, an EKG, and a CT scan, like all mixed together, would cost, like hospital patient, like whatever, all together, how much does that cost?
Thousands.
Like maybe tens of thousands?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I was on the toilet the other day.
What?
And one of my patients fell.
You were working a nursing shift?
Yeah, I was on the toilet and one of my patients fell and he had to get all those things because of that. Now, granted, like, I'm not like...
He fell because you were in the toilet, though?
Well, no, like, so I was not alerted to the... So here's the thing. I was like, no, he didn't fall because I was on the toilet. But here's my thought process, all right? I had five patients. So there's a 20% chance that I could have been in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So in an alternate reality...
You would have saved him thousands of dollars.
My number two cost
more
him
importantly,
tens of thousands of
the
dollars.
The pain and trauma of falling.
Yeah. I feel powerful, though.
What?
Well, welcome to the Back to Basis podcast. This is a podcast with me, Jason Seitz, firefighter, paramedic, RN, lover of comics, slayer of dragons.
Just stop.
And my brother, Christopher Seitz, an MD.
It's all his time
emergency.
For. It's all his time for. And no hobbies, because that's it.
Yep. And we take complicated medical topics and we break them down to the basics. Today's topic... Diabetes. What's the catchy title? It's just diabetes. I can't think of anything fun for diabetes. The snozzberries have snozzberries. That's a Willy Wonka thing, isn't it?
I don't know. What does it do with diabetes, though?
Because sugar.
Okay.
Clever?
I mean, we just call it diabetes. It's fine.
Okay. All right. A couple things. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, we will have been back from EMS World 2022. So
it was so great to see you there.
It was so great to see you there. Thank you for stopping by. It was so crazy that Chris was dressed as a clown all day on Friday. What days is it? Is it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
It's October 12th, 13th, 14th. Is when the exhibits. I mean, it's 10th through the 15th, but I think the exhibits are 12th, 13th, 14th, maybe 15th.
Something it goes like into the weekend?
No. So 14th.
It's happened already, though, so you know this. So
you already
saw
know
us
this.
There.
Yep. 10th through the 14th. 10th, 11th, 12th. Yep. 10th through the 14th.
Okay, cool. Anyway, 10th through the 14th.
It was great to see you there.
Come visit us. Yeah, we'll have been back from there. Hopefully, you got some updates about what was going on with that. I'm sure it was a great time, but we're shooting this beforehand, so sorry about that. Other announcements, listen to this on guardiancme.com. You can get a free CME credit for it. It's CAPC approved, so it means that you can use it no matter what your certifying body is. www.guardiancme.com.
I would like to vote that next time that the end of every podcast is just this announcement, since we started every podcast with it.
What do you mean? At the end of every podcast?
Yeah. Or
Well, I want to catch them early.
Okay.
Because if they're listening to it right now on like Spotify, you want to make sure that they can shut that off and go to Guardian CME so they don't have to listen to it again on the platform.
Okay.
See the strategy there?
I see.
Also, there's nothing wrong with just having some announcements and some fun things to talk about.
I don't know. It just seems boring because it's always the same thing. It's
you
always the same person talking
you
over and over
boring?
And over again.
Well, it's because you never do the announcements. You jump right into the topic. But you know what's more boring? Diabetes. Go ahead and get started.
Fair enough.
Today, we're going to generate buy-in with effective statements about diabetes. So let's review some stats on diabetic patients. What's the percentage of diabetic patients in America, Chris?
A lot.
Good enough. All right.
It is the seventh leading cause of death.
Is it really?
I read that 2 seconds ago in a textbook before this episode.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
in
like
the United States.
Pretty high.
Probably not in the world.
Seventh leading cause of death? Complications from diabetes, I would take it. You don't really die of diabetes.
No.
Like your pancreas doesn't just like explode or something.
That's true.
Cool. So it's a serious thing. A lot of Americans have it. And it's not just because we all like sugar and are fat.
True.
Let's talk a little bit about...
But that does play a large part.
It does play a part. No pun intended, a large part. Let's walk through the process of sugar metabolism and insulin's role in the process. So we're going to talk general physiology. Remember, we always like to introduce physiology, and then we can talk about pathophysiology, and then we can talk about treatment for it.
Right.
So physiology.
So diabetes is a complicated topic only for people who don't understand the basics of it. That's literally like diabetes is not complicated when you break it down and take it back to basics and talk about like just what the pancreas does and how insulin works.
You heard it here first. If you know something, it's no longer difficult to understand.
Exactly.
Thank you, Chris.
That's perfect.
And this is why I talk at the beginning of the episode.
All right. So let's talk. So we start with the pancreas. So the pancreas has cells, and we don't have to get into which kind of cells, even though Jason wants me to.
I don't.
All right, fine, Jason.
I didn't want
the
you to say
the islands of Langerhans. No. So anyway, it's technically the beta cells, in your pancreas release insulin. All right. But first, like Jason said, we have to talk about what your body does with glucose, sugar. So all sugar is broken down to glucose. Like all food really is eventually broken down to glucose. Glucose is then used by your cells to pretty much do everything.
But what about ketosis? Ketosis is a way to get glucose from creating...
by breaking down fat cells.
By creating ketones. So if you're on keto, you're still getting glucose. You're getting it from a more complicated, weird way called ketosis.
Right. You're just breaking down fat. There's a couple ways you can get glucose. You can eat it. You can...
Drink it?
No, I mean, like, you can consume glucose, right? And that increases blood sugar levels in your blood. You can, to your point, if you're not eating it, you can break down your fat cells in order to get the glucose. Mm-hmm. Or you can basically also break down, like, carbohydrates and things and
metabolize.
So either, and this is why, like, when people talk about ketosis, like, yeah, like, you're not eating sugar so that your body is forced to break down the fat cells to, and that will play a part in ketosis, which is a bad thing in the extreme, which we see in diabetics, everything. So your body needs glucose. There's only two places glucose can be. It can be in the cells, inside the cells, doing what it's supposed to do, which is being used for energy. Or it can be outside the cells, which is basically like in your tissue or in your bloodstream, that sort of thing, where it is either going to go somewhere to get stored as fat, like in your liver, or it's going to be absorbed into your cells to do the job. And diabetes is when that's not happening, essentially.
So there's no Schrodinger's cat situation where it's both in and out of the cell.
Exactly. Okay, got right. it. Nothing like that. Cool. So that's the basics.
Basics are you need sugar to survive. Your brain needs it to function, and you need it to do energy things.
Correct.
In order to get sugar, you can eat it. You can drink it. You can consume it. You can break it down from
fats and existing,
like, yeah, fats and carbohydrates.
Exactly. Everything, like every food or so, everything is broken down eventually into glucose as it's right. So how we pull glucose in and out of the cells is with insulin. Okay. So your pancreas releases insulin when glucose needs to be brought into the cells. So you eat sugar. It's now in your bloodstream. Right? Your pancreas releases insulin, which is basically acts on a receptor on all of your cells to then pull that glucose from the bloodstream and from outside into the cells. And that's where the cells use it to make energy. That's it. That's literally as simple as I can make glucose metabolism and things right. like that.
I'm now, sure there's like a chain of events and this.
Well, yeah, there's lots of other things, but like for the sake of this, we just don't really have to get into it.
Insulin makes sugar go good.
Mm-hmm. If there's a bunch of glucose, then it gets pulled into your cells, and some of it's used for energy and some of it's stored through, like, you know, made into glycogen, which can later be broken down when there's not glucose. Yep. Right, that type of thing. Okay, so what happens in diabetes is you have a problem with the insulin. You either have a problem with your body being resistant to the insulin, not making enough insulin, or not responding to the insulin.
And that defines the two types of diabetes. Our next topic, diabetes type 1, is you're not making insulin.
Right.
And you're, so in type you're pretty one, much born with diabetes.
Type 1 diabetes used to be called juvenile diabetes because it would come about early in life because your pancreas basically is not secreting enough insulin. It's almost like an autoimmune disease. It's like you're attacking your own pancreas and now there's not enough beta cells to make insulin. So you eat sugar and
you can't get that sugar in the right place.
Right. Exactly. So you can't use it for energy. You can't, like, you have too much sugar in your bloodstream.
Because you don't have any insulin.
Exactly.
So what would you need to do to treat that? We'll get to it later. You take insulin.
Take insulin, right. That's why, like, now it's not actually called juvenile diabetes anymore because, like, diet has screwed everybody up so bad in the United States that, like, kids are getting type 2 diabetes super early and like mm-hmm. type. So like
it used to be like if you were young enough, they just know it's type 1. But now it's like, no,
right.
You could be a little unhealthy child.
There's a lot of like,
I feel like it's unfair to just act like everyone who has type 2, though, is like been unhealthy.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's not necessarily true either. Yeah, because you can get a version of like type 2 diabetes where it's like you're not producing enough insulin and it's not an autoimmune condition in the same way the type 1 is. But yeah, in type 2 diabetes, your pancreas is making enough insulin. However, your body's not responding to it. You are insulin resistant. meaning
and
that
sometimes we can train our body to be insulin resistant by shocking our systems with too much sugar. And that's where the whole unhealthiness comes in.
Right. Right. So like if I'm taking sugar all the time and my pancreas is overtaxed, giving me insulin all the time because I'm eating so much sugar, eventually, like, I almost become numb to it. Like, the body, the cells can't react anymore to the insulin. They become resistant to it because it's like it's being like overtaxed. Now, what ends up happening in type 2 diabetes, though, is that as my body becomes resistant to insulin and I keep trying to push out more insulin to deal with the fact that my body's not sensing the insulin, the pancreas gets overtaxed and now my pancreas starts to fail and I do start to make less insulin because the pancreas can't keep up.
So the solution is we give them
insulin.
Yeah. So if you give insulin, though, to it, so this is what a general question would be. If you give insulin to an insulin resistant diabetic, how is that working? Okay. Just copious amounts of insulin. We just keep giving insulin and hope it works.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's different types of insulin and that sort of thing too. But that becomes part of the problem is that, like, without changes in diet and exercise and all that kind of stuff, if it's from those causes, then yeah, you continue to be insulin resistant. You need more and more and more insulin.
Speaking of like different types of insulin, like we have like long acting versus short acting is a lot of times what we like mess with as providers. Mm-hmm. So like short acting would be something that is going to metabolize sugar very quickly. Long acting is going to metabolize sugar over a longer period of time in order to stabilize your levels better.
Right.
But ideally we want your blood sugar levels to be within a healthy range, not too high and not too low.
Mm-hmm.
So what about people that deal with really low blood sugar? What's going on with that? They're a diabetic and they're low all the time. Why is that happening?
Well, that's usually because they're on insulin.
Okay.
Right. So what happens is in a normal functioning pancreas metabolism situation, I eat glucose, I eat something with sugar in it. My body senses that my sugar levels are high. It dumps insulin into my bloodstream from the pancreas, pull that into my cells and I use it. And then I store it as glycogen. Right. When my glucose levels are low, my body does not produce insulin. It starts to break down glycogen into glucose in order to get that in my bloodstream so I can use it for energy and stuff like that. In people who are diabetics who like have low blood sugar periodically, if they're on insulin daily or on other medications that help with the insulin resistance, then even when my insulin my insulin levels can still be higher than they should be, even though I don't have glucose. But that's what's happening is that I'm not breaking down glycogen because my body senses insulin's there. Does that make sense? So then what ends up happening is you get low blood sugar. That also causes its own problem and symptoms.
So our solution is like, it's kind of a cyclical issue because like that's where you bump into in emergency medicine. You're going to bump into patients that are having both high and low blood sugars and you're going to have to deal with those all the time. Is like they're consulting with their endocrinologists all the time, but they're trying to find that like magic number. And that's changing as they either get healthier or get more unhealthy, depending on if they're getting more resistance or less resistant because they're changing their diet and they're changing their exercise routine and things like that. Like we're going to either have too much insulin, so not enough sugar, or too much sugar, so not enough insulin, and it's trying to like get that perfect number where they can stay balanced, which is why you should check your blood sugar and check it often. That's
right.
Like that one guy with the mustache says on all of the Price is Right commercials.
That's right.
TM copyright, we don't own that.
Right.
I've been very legal, careful lately.
Yeah, that's good. So. That's good. So yeah, so then what, so that's the general understanding of like how normal physiology works from a glucose insulin standpoint, and then the pathophysiology of diabetes. The next step from there, though, is that how does that cause symptoms, right? How does that present? And what's interesting here is that most of the symptoms of diabetes have to do with too much blood sugar in the bloodstream. It's not in the cells, so it's out in the bloodstream. So it causes damage to tissues. Right. So there's too much sugar, too much glucose floating around, and too much of anything is a bad thing. And that causes damage. That causes damage to the nerves. That's why diabetics get like painful feet and nerve damage in their feet. It leads to problems with their eyes. So like diabetics have to get eye checks every year because it can cause damage to the optic nerve and stuff like that. There's too much sugar, like basically causing irritation. It also predisposes to infection. And that makes sense because if glucose is what we use for everything, it's also what bacteria use for everything too, right? So if there's too much blood sugar,
like rich environment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. I'm predisposed to infections because again, there's a lot of for lack of a better term, like food, right there, yeah, for bacteria to grow and thrive in a sugary environment.
When you think, you got to think of, like, I don't know if I call it comorbidity, but comorbidity within the condition. So like my feet are numb because I have nerve damage because I'm diabetes. My feet are swollen because I have diabetes, so I'm having swelling. I also have comorbidities of like CHF and things where I have backup of fluid because I have an unhealthy heart because I don't eat well. And I struggle with that because of my blood sugar and diabetes. I cut my foot and I don't feel it, so I don't pay any attention to it. I don't know that it's happening. It quickly gets infected because I have diabetes, and now they've got to chop my foot off.
Right.
Like, which is why, like, you'll see like amputations a lot of times on like severely diabetic patients, because they have those limbs become infected, and the only way to get rid of it is to remove it. They're not able to like treat it well, which is why like you should be checking on like your severely, like, diabetic patients, especially severely obese patients. You should be checking like extremities.
Yeah, and, like, well, eye exams and podiatry foot exams are like super important to have done regularly when you have diabetes, because that's where we tend to like have issues, right? The other thing we see with diabetes, and you kind of just mentioned it, is a lot of like fluid buildup, right? So they get a lot of swelling, which also predisposes them to infection. You know what I mean? And that's because if I've got a bunch of sugar,
it's a dilutant, right? So you need
all the fluids in my body are going into my bloodstream, which then, guess what? Now I have hypertension because my, you know what I mean? So it's like, you can see how this all starts to,
just like if you get puffy, if you eat a bunch of salt, you have water rush to the salt. Water's going to rush to the solute. So it's going to go towards the sugar.
Exactly.
So you'll be more.
This is also why diabetics are predisposed to dehydration, because they don't have the fluid. You know what I mean? Like they're using the fluid to just dilute glucose. They're not like using it to
see. This is far more interesting than I thought it was going to be, Chris.
That's great. I'm so glad
we just spent 55 minutes talking about medical legal, and I feel like that really, really well. But we had to do back to back podcasts because EMS World is next week, and you really queued this up to be boring as hell. I'm going to be honest with you.
I'm glad you are.
I'm excited about it now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so continue with the.
So when people come in, like when you guys see people in the field who have very high blood sugars, what's the first thing we do? We don't give insulin necessarily, right?
Correct.
What do?
Give them fluid.
We give them fluid. Because what we end up doing is we end up, they're diluted, a lot of times dehydrated, which it making their blood sugar levels even higher because they don't have it. So we dilute the blood sugar, which dilutes the, you know what I mean? And then helps kind of wash them out
basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll give things like insulin and stuff to draw that into the cells. And
is there a lot of like comorbidity with like kidney issues and trying to like filter the blood because of the high solute? Yeah.
100%. So that's another thing we see, is that like, because if you can't pull it in, you've got to like sort it out somehow, right?
Yeah.
So how did they used to, this is interesting, how did they used to test for diabetes way back in the days?
Taste their blood. If it tastes sugary,
taste your urine.
Diabetes.
You're close. They would taste the urine.
That's disgusting.
Because
Who would taste their urine?
The doctor.
The doctor would taste the urine? So the doctor's just got a little sample. He's got a little flute, and he's like,
Have you gone on a wine tour where they give you like...
Here's the thing is, if you don't have an effective baseline, how do you know if it's sugary or not? Is he drinking pee all the time to know like he's got to like refine his palate?
You would be surprised.
Is he like a sommelier of pee?
Yeah. There are like actually multiple conditions.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. There was actually multiple conditions back in the day that like you would taste or smell urine to diagnose them.
I thought it was just me.
And I actually think if you Google the
tasting pee.
No. Google like diabetes, like the terms, like diabetes mellitus, like what was the origin of the word?
Diabetes.
I bet
mellitus.
You it has something to do with sugary pee. I could be completely wrong,
diabetes,
but I want to do this as a test.
Name origin. Wow. Okay. It's,
what does it say?
It's taken from the Greek word diabetes, meaning to siphon, to pass through, and the Latin word mellitus, meaning sweet. A review of the history shows the term diabetes was first used by Apollonius of Memphis around 250 to 300 BC.
BC.
You wanted it to be about pee, though?
Well, I think there's some word we use in diabetes that's like, has to do with like...
You know, let me open an incognito window.
Anyway, while he's doing that, so basically when diabetics were first, like, when we first started to learn about the condition, that was the symptom, is that they'd have, like I said, like sweet urine, because you have to get rid of the glucose somehow. If you're not going to pull it into the cells, you can store some of it as glycogen, which is stored as fat, so you put on weight, right? Like you, and now that predisposes you to other things.
Which is also why you have intense thirst and heavy urination when you are diabetic or pre-diabetic.
Right.
You're peeing all the time because your body's trying to flush the glucose out. All that
so you're dehydrated, so you need a drink. Yeah. Exactly.
That's where diabetes insipidus comes from. It is, it means something along the lines of like water.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So how diabetes typically first presents is with what you just described. Polydipsia, meaning like
lots
really thirsty.
Thirst.
And polyuria, which is like
lots of
urination. And then obviously, like I said, like altered mental status and stuff like this because your blood sugars are doing crazy things. So that is part of, so your kidneys obviously do get damaged over time because they're overworking to pull all this extra glucose out. So you can get kidney damage and kidney failure as well. Which is why, obviously, it's the seventh leading cause of death in the United States. I mean, when you put it that way, right? It makes a lot of sense.
That's true. So I drink about 3 liters of water and 4 Dr. Peppers a day. Diet Dr. Peppers. Okay. I pee a lot. Yeah. But I'm not really worried about, like, there's no sugar in Diet Dr. Pepper.
Sure. What you need to worry about is water. Since there's also 0 calories in Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
Which in my mind never really makes sense if something has 0 calories, but there's clearly like a liquid substance here.
Yes.
What it's are you actually chemicals. Putting in your body, right?
Yeah.
So you don't need to worry about you need to worry about cancer, not diabetes. You're doing the long game. You're playing the long game. You know?
Yeah. I guess so. But no, seriously, like there have been times where like my roommate, actually, you guys met him, Chris Perrin of the Athletic Training Podcast. We used to live together at Michigan State. He would say you definitely have diabetes because you're peeing all the time. But I just drink a lot of water too. I'm also a long distance runner, which I feel like makes me more thirsty. I drink lots of water. It's a cycle.
Famous last
words. Do I have diabetes?
Famous last words. We'll test after.
It's funny. So at the department one time, I was like feeling off and I decided it was after a long run. So I decided to take my blood sugar thinking maybe I was low. It was normal. I was completely normal. But taking someone's, okay, like we start IVs in the field all the time. We take blood sugar on almost everybody. Mm-hmm. It hurts, dude. Yeah. Poking your finger, it hurts so bad. Like I felt so bad for myself for like a good hour. It hurts worse than getting an IV started in you.
Yeah.
I don't know how people do that all the time. I feel so bad for the patients that I've checked their blood sugar like three or four times in a diabetic emergency. You're just poking them.
Yeah.
And people just like, they don't even care anymore because they have it all the time. Like it hurts, guys. I don't know if it's just the lancets we were using.
Maybe it's just the resolve of the person being tested.
Yeah. Okay. So let's summarize real quick just because we just covered a lot of things. We have fluid shifting.
Mm-hmm.
We have nerve damage.
Mm-hmm.
We have infection risk.
Mm-hmm.
We have obviously insulin resistance and or the lack of production of insulin. That means that we could have too much sugar or too much insulin because of our treatments. Mm-hmm. So we need to adjust that.
Mm-hmm.
I cover about everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then
and we're trying to keep it real simple. Because again, I think sometimes diabetes can be very complicated because you're thinking to yourself, like on the one hand, you're like diabetes, blood sugar, but why is this guy so thirsty and have foot issues? It's hard to connect the two until you break it down and like really simply like, okay, here's the normal pathophysiology or here's the normal physiology. Here's the pathophysiology and here's all the side effects. And really at least for me, when I started learning about diabetes and truly understood it the way I understand it now, which I'm sure there's lots of gaps in my knowledge, but was like when I started to realize that all the symptoms and side effects had to do with all the glucose in the bloodstream and not in the cells. That right there, all of a sudden you start to be like, oh, okay, the infection thing makes sense. The fluid retention makes sense. The storing of it as glycogen and thus fat and the weight issues make sense. The eye nerve damage becomes, you know, when you hear like, oh, you know, get your eyes checked every year when you're a diabetic. You're like, well, I don't understand how that, you know, but like you start to think about all this toxic like glucose. The other thing that we can talk about too is the acidosis part of this as well, right? So like we think about diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA, right? That's like a true emergency is when someone goes into DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis. We talked about ketosis, right? It's the breaking down of fat to make glucose, right?
And ketones is the thing that it's broken down into where you get the keto side of it.
Right,
that's just the word keto is
right.
From
but ketones are acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Ketones are acidic in our blood. So if you can imagine if someone is resistant to the insulin and so they've been taking insulin, so their blood sugar levels
very little sugar.
Yeah.
So now my body needs a fix. I need glucose. So
I need
what
glucose
am I
going to
do? I'm going to break down proteins and fats into ketones but those are really acidic. So I'm getting,
if I get
getting the sugar
high,
that I need to, or I'm trying to get the sugar that I need, but my blood acidity is increasing. Mm-hmm. Now.
Exactly. Right. So then we get into this acidosis space where we have, it's really a combination of dehydration, extreme ketosis, and again, the inability to regulate because of our insulin resistance.
We see this a lot of times with alcoholics because of the intense amount of, they'll go into DKA when they're having like withdrawals essentially, right?
If they have diabetes. So alcoholics can also go into a ketosis like state, but it's from the alcohol. It's the breaking down of the alcohol, not
making
like sugar. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, also alcohol has a lot of carbs in it, obviously. So like you can develop through chronic alcoholism, you can develop type 2 diabetes.
True, yeah.
Because of the high sugar amounts.
Well, yeah, and the thing is too is like anything that's going to tax your glucose metabolism process, right? Mm-hmm. You tax something too much, it'll break down. If you break it down, now when you break down your glucose metabolism structure that the body's created to do, that's diabetes, right? So you can see, and then you can see too why a lot of times you see the combo of diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol, because one, the diet, but then two, again, as I'm storing fat, now I've got increased fat, which also predisposes to hypertension, the fluid shifts, okay, and then that predisposes. So like you can see why diabetes becomes a comorbid condition amongst other like cardiac risk factors
and
as well.
Toxicological, and like it's tied to so many things.
Yep,
so
exactly.
Seven of the leading causes of death. Mm-hmm. Death. That does make me wonder though, like if you die from like a toxicological emergency, but you had diabetes, like are they counting that as the,
I don't
as
know
the
how
diabetes
they,
check?
I don't know how they got the stats.
I'd love to interview like that person who
the
like
statistician.
Yeah.
Statistician who used the data to say that it was a seventh leading cause.
Yeah. Like there's a big issue with that with COVID, right? Like people would like have COVID and they get hit by a car and they'd be like, that's a COVID death. At least that was the rumor.
That was the rumor.
Again.
But I do think we had trouble like with people who like had COVID and then like got pneumonia as well. Did they die of COVID or pneumonia?
Right.
And like technically both.
Yeah.
I think like if you die of a comorbid condition of diabetes, I'm sure like.
I would argue that if it's type 2 and you're obese and that's how you develop the diabetes, it's suicide because you were told don't eat that much sugar.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? What I'm trying to say is there's an extreme to each side.
Okay, sure.
So the statistician, sure. I'd just like to know like how
of,
we figure this
for
out.
For the use of causing of showcasing an extreme, I just don't think that really it's
no, I don't.
Kind.
Don't, do not take that clip and put it all over TikTok and use it for your political agenda.
Jason does not actually think that people who eat too much sugar are killing themselves on purpose.
Or do I? That's my right to think.
I guess. I guess.
As someone who 5 minutes ago was asking you if I'm potentially pre-diabetic.
right.
Trust me, I'm not judgmental towards these people.
Right.
Cool. So common emergencies that we're going to see when we shift back to the emergency side is we're going to see someone with either high sugar or we're going to see someone with low sugar, mm-hmm. right? So if we have high sugar, signs and symptoms are going to be very similar to low sugar because we're going to be dealing with altered mental status essentially, right? Too much sugar can mess your brain up. And too low sugar will definitely mess your brain up.
And low sugar probably more so than high sugar. Like you have to have pretty high sugars for like a while before you start to like, and that the altered mental status is probably more due to the acidosis than it is the sugars themselves. But low blood sugar, obviously, like you said, if you can't, we use glucose for everything. The brain uses like the most glucose in the shortest amount of time. So it's the first thing that we start to see issues with.
Yes. I think the actual stat is 90, somewhere in the 90s% of the glucose used in the body is used in the brain. Which is amazing, which is why seizures, fun fact, if we're going to shift over, which is why seizures, after someone has a seizure, a lot of times their blood sugar will be low, whether they're a diabetic or not. So especially if they are a diabetic, check their sugar after they seizure, because you're going to be dealing with a comorbidity that deals with mental status, and it's going to confuse you pretty quick. And you're going to be like, did they have a seizure because they're super low blood sugar? Did they have a seizure first and that caused low blood sugar? Like what's going on with
this? Well, and also we see then like, is this a prolonged seizure or are they just hypoglycemic after a seizure and that's why they haven't like come to all the way yet?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Is this status epilepticus or is this like, yeah.
I like it. God, medicine is so cool.
As you just swig Dr. Pepper.
It's a diet Dr. Pepper. There's nothing in here. Look, I'm going to read off the
ingredients. It's just cancer, man. It's just cancer.
I'm going to read off the ingredients in a sexy way so that Dr. Pepper will sponsor me because I still want that as a sponsor.
Okay.
Carbonated water. Caramel color. Oh, God. All right, so in terms of a low sugar emergency, what are we going to give? We're usually going to give a form of sugar. So like in my area, we gave D50 all the time. Mm-hmm. For pediatric patients, we'd give D25. You dilute the D50. So it would be like dextrose 50%. So 50% water and 50% like pure sugar diluted. It's like a gel. You got to push it into, you got to really push it. It's like pushing syrup into the IV. Couple things to consider. Infiltration is a big deal when you're dealing with sugar product. If you infiltrate an IV and you start dumping sugar into like
the glucose is very toxic.
Yeah. Like, it will like, you'll have like a necrotic limb.
Right. Which is why then you can imagine if your bloodstream has high levels of glucose in all the time, like, yeah, it's going to cause kidney issues and liver issues and all the, because it's like, it's literally like a, eroding toxin.
So if you dump a bunch of sugar accidentally into their interstitial space,
that can cause a problem.
Yeah, it'll like eat away. It like turns black.
Yeah.
So just make sure you got a good IV. Check your IV first. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like flush it and make sure it's flowing well. Well, it's not blown. The other thing is glycogen is given in some places, I believe.
Glycogen or glucagon?
Sorry, glucagon. Thank you. Glucagon, which is basically the stored version of sugar. I don't know. I didn't deal with glucagon that much. Let's talk about glucagon.
Yeah, glucagon is,
I heard like a lot of EMTs can give glucagon and stuff because they can't do D50 necessary because you got an IV start. But like people would give like, I don't know. I read a study where EMTs were giving glucagon. It was useful. We're going to take a brief moment while Chris double checks his information on glucagon so we don't have another cardiac meds mix up like we did a couple weeks ago.
So what glucagon does is it causes the liver to release, like to break down glycogen. So
the liver?
Okay. So you store glycogen in your liver and as you know, as fat and that sort of thing. So glucagon.
That's why I said glycogen. Glucagon is the storage unit for glucose. If you have like excessive glucose, a lot of times you'll store it as
glycogen.
Yeah. Glucagon, you give glucagon or glucagon is secreted by the liver to break down glycogen into glucose. So it's using your stores.
Right. So which kind of makes sense from like giving D50 can obviously like have some side effects because you're introducing more and new glucose into the bloodstream versus giving a medication like glucagon is just going to encourage the body to break down its own stores. So like big shifts or side effects, you're probably not going to see, right?
And the body will be using those stores anyway, but we're just helping that along. We're turning that faucet on a little bit more to break down more of those stores so that they can have glucose in their system. Is that correct? You're looking down at your feet at the textbook.
That again. Is correct.
Okay, wonderful. So yeah, I've never dealt with glucagon in my practice. Like we didn't deal with that too much, but I know that it is common as a pre-hospital provider, like a thing that they do. Do you know how it's given? Is it IV or is it?
I do not know.
So it might be.
I think it can be given multiple ways, like glucose can be as well.
Yeah. Well, glucose can't be given like intramuscularly. You would.
I meant like orally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, and that's another thing too, is like if they have a gag reflex, like you just give them orange juice or something. Like we do that all the time. Like before we start D50 and stuff, if they're like, I'm a little low, and we look and they're not like dangerously low, we're like, here, make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and we'll check your sugar in 15 minutes, right? So you want to work on getting those sugar levels back to acceptable levels.
And I just want to say quick, I don't know if we said this, but glucagon is released by the pancreas.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why I was like, liver?
No, liver? It stimulates the liver to break down glycogen to glucose, but the pancreas releases insulin when there's high blood sugar and glucagon when there's low blood sugar. So glucagon is the pancreas releasing it to stimulate the breakdown of glycogen to glucose. That
is the pancreas does it all, man. It turns things on, it turns things off. Cool. So if they have high sugar, we're going to give them fluid pretty much like Chris was talking about earlier. So if they have if they're super hyperglycemic, then we're going to try to start entering the process of like long-term flushing that sugar out. So allowing them to pee and
because it might be lots of water. It might be, and I want to say falsely elevated, but there might be a component of the elevation from dehydration. Yeah. So we have to deal with the dehydration first before we deal with the insulin problem.
Gotcha. So if they're low, give them sugar. If they're high, give them fluid. You may work in an area where you can also give them insulin, but I never did. So, and this is really about me. This whole thing has always been about me.
Absolutely.
Cool. So things to consider. Last thing I was going to talk about is long-term treatment and management. I feel like we've covered that pretty well. Long-term treatment and management would obviously be things like insulin pumps or, you know, checking your sugar often and making sure that you're taking insulin. There is long-acting insulin and short-acting insulin. So it's just kind of dealing with the nuances. And then also, you know, fixing your diet, trying to expose yourself to less sugars.
And exercise too. So like we won't get into it in here because I don't know. I didn't look at the research. But like there's research to show that like prolonged exercise actually stimulates the body to react to insulin better. I mean, so there's like, there are certain things you can do with insulin resistance to reverse it, not just the diet piece. The diet piece is part, but also like exercise and that sort of thing.
Can you
probably meditation?
Can you undo diabetes? Meditation?
I'm pretty sure that if you meditated long enough and hard enough, you could cure diabetes.
Because you would have distracted yourself from eating so much sugar.
Maybe, but it still worked. But anyway, where is it?
Can you like undo diabetes type 2?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can just cure yourself of diabetes if you're...
As long, I mean, like at some point, there's like a path of no return, right? Like this is super, this is completely aside, but this is, you can definitely reverse diabetes. You can actually reverse plaque buildup in your like vessels. They did a study, and I don't know why we don't talk about the study more, where they had people who had cardiac catheterizations done.
This is a completely different topic.
It is, but super interesting. Okay. But it's with significant stenosis in their vessels.
Yes.
Who then went on a plant-based diet and completely, with a follow-up cardiac cath, completely got rid of all the plaques in their arteries. That's insane to me.
Doesn't make any sense even. That's crazy.
It's crazy. So if you can do that, you can cure diabetes with your thoughts. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. No, but yeah, so diabetes. Now, type 1 diabetes, like I said, if it's an autoimmune.
Yeah, like, it's not your fault. Yeah, your pancreas just sucks. Sorry.
Right. So there's nothing you can do about that one. But I don't know. Like, I mean, maybe they're doing someday pancreas transplants or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why. There's a reason you can't do a pancreas transplant. Episode 597 will be. 597. I don't know. There's a bunch of rabbit holes I want to go down, but we should probably just end this thing because I think that was a good overview.
Sounds good. Quick takeaway: always have a pee flute and test your patient's urine with your tongue.
Absolutely.
Two, if your patient is a type 2 diabetic, they probably don't have a good diet. Three, just all the offensive things are just no. Yeah, high sugar, give them fluid or insulin. Low sugar, give them sugar.
Or good.
Pretty easy. Comes down to that. But understanding the background of this, I think, is important. And I've actually learned a lot from it, taking a lot away.
I'm so glad. Awesome. So. Well, thank you guys so much. Again, if you want to get continuing education credits, check out guardiancme.com. You can listen to this as well as other episodes of our podcast and EMS 2020 and EMS On Air, a couple other podcasts that we partner with on there.
And we should just have a thing that we say this at the end of every episode. That's you.
Yes. Well, this should come at the end.
No, it did.
And also, thank you for visiting us at EMS 2020 last week.
We had such a great time.
Or the week before.
It was so cool when Roger came back to the pool with us and we did cocaine.
Why? No.
I'll just try to guarantee a good time next week.
All right. That sounds good. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time. If you want to reach out to us and suggest topics, shoot us an email at info@guardiancme.com. That's an email address we have, right?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, info@guardiancme.com. We'd love to hear from you, feedback, as well as, again, topics you'd like us to jump into and break down to basics. So have a great rest of your week.
Stay sweet.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for taking a listen. If you are studying for the National Registry exam, we're here to help. We have a National Registry prep program to help you pass that exam. Check us out at guardiantestprep.com. If you'd like continued education credits for listening to our podcast or watching this on YouTube, follow us at guardiancme.com. 100% free CAPC credits. No matter what state or country you're in, we're here to help. So again, we thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a wonderful week.